Sentient beings are numberless. I vow to save them. Desires are inexhaustible. I vow to end them. The dharmas are boundless. I vow to master them. The Buddha's way is incomparable. I vow to attain it. Good morning, everyone. There's a saying that goes something like, every hair in a lion's mane is every other lion that ever existed and ever will. They're all there in each hair. Does anybody know what fractals are? How about Indra's net? When you practice well, is that you recognize this. You recognize this presence beyond presence, beyond idea, beyond conceptualizing, beyond identifying with I, me, mine, thinking of this body that's out there, this is in here. Indra's net. All hairs on each of our bodies. Not just that, but all the stars in the whole universe are in each one of our hairs. So this may sound like an abstraction, but an awakened person experiences this as a reality, not as an abstraction, not as a thought, but how things actually are. If this happens, that happens. I remember one time being on retreat and coming back from it. It was on a mountaintop up in the Catskills, and leaving the retreat after, I think it was a 5-day retreat, something like that. It was mostly in silence. People finally beginning to talk and walking down this dirt road down from the top of the mountain where everybody was camping, and we had this big retreat. So walking next to this person, and because we've been doing a lot of meditating, I was really, I was very high on life and not talking for all those days. There was nothing but presence, because talking so often separates us from experience. So without talking, it's another expedient means to get in touch with things just as they are. One of the first words out of the person's mouth who was walking next to me, as she was looking down upon all these people in all their different garb and their different expressions of uniqueness, she said, "We're all such beautiful jewels." It was a nice way to leave the retreat. Seeing everyone as a multifaceted, beautiful jewel, reflection and reflecting each other. Indra's net, when I visualize it, is like that to me. It's all these facets, this individualization of the ultimate unity of everything. One of the kinds of samadhi that you can practice is one where you're experiencing just this suchness, that you then take the inner and allow it to like radiate like light outwardly. It's another way of expressing compassion. So it's like, it's another just expedient means, you know, it's using imagination to feel the connectedness on a very subtle level of being, so that it strengthens that connection in such a way that you feel more capable of being who you are and feel more solid in who you are, in the sense of not being bumped around and thrown around by the circumstances in your life. You know, flowing in and out of things without them throwing you off, like slam, bam, you know. And there's all kinds of ways we've talked about this. You know, it's attachments, it's expectations, it's expecting something to be a certain way. And when it's not, it's like hitting a wall. But what if your expectation is nothing more than just interconnectedness? Indra's net. I think that's freedom. So I'm just trying to give you another way of looking at this, you know, conceptualization that we form about practice. You know, we talk about attachments so much that we have this conceptual view, idea of it. And it's not until we get slammed or feel suffering directly that we get real with it, you know, because we sort of have an abstraction to things. It's one of the problems, I think, of identifying strongly with being Buddhist or a Zen practitioner or whatever. You know, it's that identification that takes us away from actually experiencing what does it mean to be a meditator, getting in this moment. The only thing I could get out of meditation this morning was that I was really tired. That was it. That was my big insight. Insight is interesting because it's that aha moment that happens when you're least expected. Not always when you're sitting. It could be sitting on the toilet. But insight, to me, is also another reflection of suchness, of being in Indra's net and not feeling separated. And there's that out there and me in here. Another word for Buddha nature is Tathagata Garbha, which just means Buddha's womb. It's an interesting way of looking at it. The womb of Buddha that we all have. You know, every sentient being has this. So it's not like we have to become something other than what we already are. We just have to let it mature. So in the sudden school, it's sudden awakening and then gradual, you know, maturing. So you may have an awakened experience where you wake up to Indra's net, but then you still have to put it into practical use in this existence that you're experiencing as you. One of the definitions I heard of a bodhisattva was someone asked, so, you know, does a bodhisattva think about being a bodhisattva? Does a bodhisattva think about being compassionate? And the answer was, bodhisattva is all beings. Bodhisattva doesn't think that there's something else. Bodhisattva isn't trying to be a bodhisattva. It's awakening. It's not trying to become something other. That's what I woke up this morning thinking about. Indra's net and fractals. You know, here we are with these ancient techniques of understanding the universe. And then science comes along in our age and presents us with these clues, but expressed in scientific terms. It's just like fractals. Every single element is a reflection of the whole and is the whole. So this paradox, and we talk about this paradox a lot, of is, isn't, individual, no self, yet experiencing this idea of self through eyes, ears, nose, tongue, the senses, and then, you know, identifying, associating what those mean through our mental capacities and thinking. Who knows, you know, maybe computer science after this zeros and ones, maybe it's fractals. The next leap, multidimensional. Who knows? Who we are right now as humans? Who will we be as humans in 100 years. Well, we'll still have the hair of the lion. We'll still have stardust. We'll still be part of the whole universe, just as it is. Just these unique, multifaceted jewels, reflecting it in whatever form we're taking. Is that all gibberish, or am I making sense this morning?
Someone with an IT background, you're spot on.
Yeah, the other thing I thought of is internet, you know, and then internet. So that doesn't solve anything immediately, like hunger or needing sleep. Still have this body paradox, right? Chopping wood, carrying water. Should we talk about that? That still has to happen. You can't have just Indra's net. Because here's the paradox is you have this body. You're constantly bombarded by from your history, your experience, your relationships with others. And you're constantly up against decisions and choices that, you know, hopefully you're using wisdom to make the right kinds of choices. So wisdom comes from all of this together. That's just us ordinary people here, us sitting here together, doing what we can to improve the quality of our lives and live a better life and learn from our mistakes. Buddha still slept. He still got sick and died. He still, you know, had to eat. He still had all these things, but the way he flowed through life was not a struggle. There was no struggle because he was beyond birth and death. That's not something we can intellectually understand.
As bodhisattvas, do we have to go through that kind of suffering to get there?
Because a bodhisattva is all beings, ordinary beings suffer, bodhisattva suffers, beings are happy, bodhisattva is happy.
I'm thinking specifically of the story of the Buddha and how he first renounced all the worldly goods and his position, and then he went on that spiritual journey and all the suffering that he went through. Mm-hmm. So is that required for ordinary people like us?
Well, each of us journey to our Buddhahood is a different journey. Buddha's journey was Buddha's journey, the historical Buddha. Your Buddhahood is your journey. My Buddhahood is my journey. I'm not going to sit under that tree in India. But that doesn't mean that, you know, I won't be tempted and that I won't suffer and that I won't have things to recognize and realize. You know, even though it appears that all our paths are different, there's something very similar about them all. I mean, why can we have compassion for another human being? How is it that we can identify with their suffering? If we were separate and unique and not connected, how could we have that experience? If we had a self and it was a separate self from that self over there. One of Buddha's main teachings is no self. How to wrap your head around that one. As long as we're identified with this idea of self, then we're trying to prove something. Bodhisattva is not trying to prove anything. So the suffering comes from our identification. And every time we recognize that, we're liberated. That's liberation, recognizing our suffering and what its causes.
So I think that suffering is necessary without a understanding that we're suffering and why we suffer, then we don't get to a place where we have the compassion.
Okay. Yeah.
And it's the first noble truth.
Yeah, right.
I was listening to a teacher on one of the tri-school programs. He was talking about suffering as noble.
Why we suffer.
I have a Zen calendar. And this past week, one of the things that came up there was something. And the answer was, I think the question might, I don't remember the question, but I think the question was, how can we care for others? And the answer was, there is no one.
There you go.
And that's what I had. That's what's been on my mind like all week. I mean, I was just struck by that. You know, it was just, there is no, and that's what you were talking about today.
Yeah. Well said. That strong identification with self creates fear. Because what if someone takes it away from you? It's unfortunate to have that kind of fear. It's sad. It hurts. It hurts to live in fear. I have compassion for people who act out of that space.
And I think for yourself too. I think we often, you know, worry about what other people are thinking and feeling, especially, you know, because we do see that interconnectedness. We want to make sure that other people are not suffering, but I think we forget to step back and show that same compassion to ourselves.
Yeah. 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 If you don't take care of yourself, you're not going to take care of anybody else. Sounds simple, but it takes some insight to recognize when you're not taking care of yourself.
And that's really important for mothers.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, and fathers too.
Well, thank you. I like being included. There's no other. This thing about no other, I love it. It works so well in so many distinctions that we make. Whether it's gender, for example, you know, on the deepest level of there is no other, gender is just on the surface. You know, from the point of view of Indra's net, multifaceted jewels, yes. Respecting each individual's being just as they are, yes. But there's no other, there's no better, worse. You know, I should be over here, or I should be over there. It's boom, there you are. There's no other. Yeah, well, you know, this whole teaching, this no self teaching it's scary to a person at a certain level. Yeah. What's to become of me then? Thanks for sharing your wisdom with me this morning, guys. Have a wonderful day. Thank you.